You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. Now, what I'm talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us. Enjoy your lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Guten Tag, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who's celebrating his birthday today. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan. Happy birthday.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. That's me.
Working on your birthday.
Yeah. There's this podcast that I listen to sometimes, right? It's called The Worst Idea of All Time. And what it is there's these two stand-up comics, oceanic stand-up comedians, and they every week for a year they watch the same really, really bad film, and then they record their podcast immediately after. And obviously over the course of the year you get to listen to them sort of gradually go insane from the process. And sort of one of the major themes of the podcast is that, like, obviously they've chosen these careers as comedians that are joyful and fun, and then they've as a bit deliberately made what they do as miserable and awful and repetitive and monotonous as possible. And
like appointing Antonio Conte.
Yeah, it's like appointing Antonio Conte. And one of the aspects that upholds that is that they always do their podcast on Monday morning.
Amazing.
So anyway, I celebrated my birthday yesterday because The Extra Inch always records on a Monday.
What did you do? What did you get up to?
I saw Godzilla Minus One. Really good film.
I saw from your ex post. Is that a thing? Is it called an ex or an ex post?
It's called a tweet, mate. And I went axe throwing. That's fun.
Did you? Nice. How were you with the old axes?
Not bad.
I imagine you've got a good arm on you.
No, I was gonna tell a story there, but it would just sound like the most fucking awful humble brag. So just put in place a humble brag of your own assumption in place here.
Nice. Shep says, does Ange care about dribbly wingers as much as Nathan does?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel like that's kind of the question of the episode, to be honest.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not that sure anymore.
Well, there's a theory later on in the pod from Tobias Howlett, which we'll come to when we talk about transfers. Obviously, Shep's question is in relation to the signing of Timo Werner, which is why also Bardi greeted us in German.
That's well done, Windy. You have a good ear there.
I mean, before we start on the Burnley game, how are we feeling about the Werner transfer, Bardi? Well, it was a bit of a shock, wasn't it?
Well, I'm not going to do it because someone said in Discord, Bardi's going to do it. So I'm not going to do it, but I am going to do it. Where was the ITK, mate? Where was it? No one knew about it. All your ITKs, they're all in the mud. Nobody. We've been talking about every transfer, even the most kind of random stuff in the world. No one said Werner until Romano said it, and then everyone's like, oh, it's happening. Where were they? You're in the mud, mate.
Do you know why that is?
What? Because ITK is nonsense?
No, there is a legit reason as to why there was no ITK on Timo Werner.
Of course there is. Go on, Windy, tell me.
Because, supposedly, the ITK is that he was identified by our new sporting director, Johan Langer, who I'm assuming most of the Spurs ITKs don't have connections with yet, because he's new in the job. And I think this is interesting because, I mean, you'd expect a new sporting director to come in and bring their own targets. But Spurs have a structure in place that was put in place before Paratici and transformed during Paratici, which revolves around a bunch of football data recruitment specialists. And then, you know, Paratici, who's a man about town, going off and chatting to proper football men about players all over the place. So it is interesting that we've got this new guy has come in very senior level and has immediately recommended a potential target. I do find that fascinating. Nathan, how are you feeling about Werner?
Mixed. Yeah, I think over on what did you call it? X Spurs X on X Spurs on the Spurs X posting platform, formerly known as Twitter.com. There's been a lengthy discussion basically over whether he's like a good player, and like that isn't the discussion at all. Like he's definitely a good player in my opinion. He's always been a good player. Also true that he's always been a pretty iffy finisher who has significant swings in his confidence. And that has always had a big effect on his finishing ability. What is curious to me, and is obviously relevant to our opening question, is he's another guy who, like Brennan Johnson, like Son, pretty much like Richarlison, like Sessegnon, his main thing is like running away from the ball. And we've got quite a few of those guys already. And he's probably going to be the smartest mover off the ball, whilst also being similarly fast to our two really fast ones.
And he does also have better take on data than most of our existing wingers.
He's not a take on guy.
I think it implies some other stuff as well, but I want to come onto that when we talk about Tobias's theory. I quite like it as a short term move. I think the January market is difficult generally. You know, it's mid-season. Players don't want to let their elite talents go because it can completely ruin your season. And that is understandable.
So they don't let their elite talents go. They just let their middling talents go.
Should we talk about that for a moment, actually? Can I interrupt there? Out of favour at Leipzig because they brought in Openda, and Openda has been excellent and is younger and has a higher upside. And Leipzig are all about churning over the talent. So he's been out of favour, and it's not too much more to it than that. And they also play Paulson, who's a target man, so they don't need two runny guys. Except we need four runny guys. But anyway, carry on.
I think it's a good point. And I think it makes sense for them to offload him in the same way that it makes sense for Man City to offload Calvin Phillips, who I think is a good player. It makes sense for Spurs to offload Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, who I think is a good player. Like, good players do go in January, but not the best players, not the club's best players, typically. The players that are surplus to requirement go, like Kulusevski and Bentancur, which was obviously ridiculous.
Dog shit, terrible players.
But I think given where we are at this point in the season, with Perisic and Solomon injured, Alejo Veliz injured, we're thin on the ground in terms of our backups. We've played the hell out of Son so far this season, who we know is struggling with the workload, carrying injuries as a result, getting on a bit. We've got Johnson and Kulusevski who play wide, but actually Kulusevski we discovered might just be better inside, and it will probably get a few more minutes inside now. Plus we've got Son going off to the Asian Games. We've got other immediate sort of pressing issues with the squad. And as a sort of short term, relatively cheap, and I say relatively cheap because we're paying £165,000 a week in wages, punt. I quite like Werner as pressure on the first team, cover for the first team, legs off the bench, and then if he does well, a solid first team winger who will hopefully adapt quite quickly to wing ball and will adapt quickly to the high press because, well, he's played in Germany for the last decade, so gegen pressing is a thing. I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. I think he could be a smart bit of business given where we are right now. That's not to say he'd have been my first choice. Obviously, he wouldn't have even come into the equation. Like, he certainly wasn't on your spreadsheet, Nathan, for good reason.
No, because I wasn't looking at this profile, right? But I think that, like, in terms of an opportunity, like you said, like recognizing the opportunity that there's a very good player, at least a good player, right, available. Like, a loan with an option for €70 million is, like, we've got only upside there. If he's good... Yeah. If he's really good for us and proves a really good option, that's a really cheap buy. And if it doesn't work out for us and we find out, oh, actually, we don't need four guys who run away from the ball fast and we send them back, then there's no downside. So, you know, business-wise, it's really good. The only thing would be like a place in the squad, but then we're now shifting players out, so it's fine. Sorry, buddy, what are you going to say, mate?
No, I think the theory of Werner is solid. He, in theory, he's a good player, but I don't think he's going to come in and change us. But what he does give us is a better alternative to what we have currently as a rotation option. which is good. I don't think he's going to come in and bang in 10 goals before the end of the season, and then all of us are going to go, oh, actually sign him for £19 million. I just don't think it's going to work out. But, you know, he's better than Dan Juma. He's better than Brian Hill. So it's an improvement in that way.
Yeah, yeah. So how many goals do you think he is going to bang in, Bardi?
I would be delighted with 5 non-penalty goals.
That'll be a great return, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just how many do you score for Chelsea in 2 years? But yeah. We've seen Werner have some awful games, but then occasionally I've seen him have some brilliant moments. So we don't know what we're going to get. I don't think the Timo Werner that was linked to Liverpool and everyone else before he went to Chelsea, that idea hasn't been around for a while. We'll see what we get. But yeah, he's better than Solomon. He's better than Hill. He's miles better than what we saw from Sessegnon as well. So that's a good thing.
Just stick to the cutbacks, Timo.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about him taking minutes from Richarlison up top and discovering Richarlison's 15 goals that he needs. And suddenly now you're mentioning what he's getting at as a tally. I think he's played sort of kind of at this stage half and half of his career up top and out wide. But I think he leans more as an up top type player than, you know, Johnson, for example. So, yeah, definitely a mix. But again, he'll be doing the same thing in either position. The when you talk about like the player that he was, I think that like essentially he was the instrument at the end of Nagelsmann's football for 2 years, and so he put up ridiculous numbers, which I guess is sort of the Kyogo thing, right? Is the fast guy who runs onto low crosses, the tapping merchant. But obviously,
you think he's more likely to be that one than the guy making the low crosses?
Well, a bit of both, but I'm saying that his the hype around him really built up when he was the guy scoring the tap-ins in a system that produced a lot of tap-ins.
Yeah,
and we're not quite there. We aren't the Nagelsmann machine just yet.
No. I think that's fair, and I think the impact of Maddison being out has really stifled our progress in that respect. Let's talk about the Burnley game.
Before we go to the Burnley, I was on LinkedIn having a little look around over the Christmas period, and I happened to fall upon the page of an old university mate who I've not seen or heard from in I don't know, since I was at university, what's that, nearly 20 years ago. And we got chatting, and it turns out the chap that's sitting next to him, Pat Goodall, is a massive fan of The Extra Inch. Phil asked me to say hello to Pat. So, hi, Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Oh, very nice. Hi, Pat. I found the Burnley game really hard work.
Should have been there in the freezing cold. Made even worse. On a dry January kind of thing as well.
Yeah, it wasn't... I mean, when the starting 11 was announced, I thought, good, taking it seriously, just swap them away, get this dealt with, move on. How are you guys feeling?
Pretty much the same, yeah. Yeah, and then hopefully opportunity to bring younger players into the game later, which is what happened. So, you know, the best possible thing as far as you're concerned, right, Wendy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me more about this being hard to watch, please. Tell me more about that.
It felt like a basketball game. It felt very end-to-end and like there was a real lack of control from Spurs' perspective.
Been a recent I don't theme, think we were, in my opinion. That.
Yeah. I think because Burnley are poor, really poor, I didn't expect it to be quite like this in this game. I don't think the referee helps us. I said this in my little post-match reaction pod. I felt we should have had a penalty quite early on, to be honest. I thought the one on Udogie was a penalty. I think if he'd given it, then it wouldn't get ruled out. Like and yeah, exactly, different game. And then I felt we should have had a penalty in the second half as well, to be honest. But it wasn't to be. The referee,
what was that in the second half? Which penalty?
It was on...
The goalkeeper. Because VAR was doing its stuff at the ground. It was just butting in and no one kind of knew what happened. There was one tackle as well where VAR had a look. We didn't know whether it was Bentancur or if it was the Burnley player. So VAR was popping up every now and then, but we didn't really have much idea what was going on.
Oh, God, it's annoying because I said it in the reaction pod specifically what incident it was and now I can't remember. I should have written it down. But yeah, there was one that I felt was a fairly clear-cut penalty in the second half that wasn't given. I think it felt like the the referee must have been, and this is an assumption, been doing a lot of championship games recently, because he let a lot of fouls go that would normally get called in Premier League matches. I know this wasn't a Premier League match, but it's between two Premier League teams. And it sort of felt like there was a real lack of protection for some of our players. You know, Lo Celso got absolutely kicked to bits in the first half, and came off with a knock, actually. And Brian Hill, when he came on, was getting similar treatment, and the referee wasn't calling fouls at all. And it felt a bit championship to me. I don't think he quite got the level right in terms of what was a foul and what wasn't a foul. Some people love that. Some people like it just to flow. Like the Newcastle-Sunderland game over the weekend had a real ebb and flow to it because the referee was just letting any old tackle go. He got away with murder. I felt like it was stifling our quick football quite a lot. It allowed them to make a lot of fouls that would normally get called and stifle the football. That's not to make an excuse. I thought we were quite poor in this game. What did you think being there, Bardi, watching from the sidelines?
Yeah, early FA Cup rounds are always different because the crowd is different and there's definitely a different vibe around the stadium. A lot of different faces and people coming to their first games. I had a chap next to me with his wife and she went, "Is it always this boring?" I felt like you should have been here when Conte was here. It was one of the thing what made the game interesting is because it was 0-0 and it was on a knife edge and it could swing either way. But yeah, it wasn't the greatest game, although I did see one of the best goals I've ever seen live. Yeah, it wasn't a great game. It was the fact it was 0-0 for so long that made it interesting. But I think in these early rounds, just getting through it was the most important thing. And I'm not too down on it. I don't know what it was like on TV, but I'm not too down on the game as a whole. And we got to see some new faces and I'm not too down about it.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was so bad.
Okay. I've been surprised by a lot of the kind of comments of this was terrible, this was awful. I mean, admittedly, like the Liverpool Arsenal game was a cracking match, and for different reasons the Sunderland Newcastle game was a proper thwacking game, man. We're just massive trees were just taking lumps out of each other. But I do think that the timing of it and everything else probably didn't work in its favour.
Nathan, tell me more. What did you like about the performance?
Oh, I like that we had a good amount of the ball. I like that we had quite a few shots. They weren't great quality shots. I felt that we were the better team. I was frustrated, as I frequently am, that one, we didn't have a player who wanted to receive the ball to feet and then make something happen once we were in the final thirds and we'd camped out there for a moment. And two, tied to that also, our general reluctance to be in that situation and rather sort of try to force counterattacks that aren't necessarily there over and over again. And end up with sort of a half chance and then snatching at those half chances with players who aren't the best shooters also. And that was sort of the theme of the game. I think we sort of put up 1.2, 1.3 expected goals over the course of the game, which sort of like amounted to a slow grind. And then obviously Porro hit an absolute wonder goal. Oh my goodness. But basically, yeah, everything good happening for us only through transitionary moments, despite us having quite a bit of the ball.
I guess a lot of what you've just said can be used as a springboard to talk about Brennan Johnson's performance. There's two ways to look at Brennan Johnson's performance, I think. The first is he made some really useful runs and he got into some really good positions and he nearly made a few things happen with some crosses and he had a really good cut inside and shoot moment to the far post. He had another good shot. The other way of looking at it, which I've seen a lot more, is that he was wasteful in the final third and isn't delivering once he gets into those positions. So I'm somewhere in the middle. I give him credit for getting into those positions because others don't always do that. And I thought he utilised his acceleration really effectively. But I think it's fair to also criticise his lack of end product. Although I would say his numbers so far for Spurs have been pretty good since he joined. What did you think, Bardi?
I mean, as someone who every week criticises a certain player, perhaps not logically, I do think the abuse that Brennan Johnson is getting very strange. His first touch on the run is beautiful. When the crossfield ball comes to him, he takes it on the run beautifully. And you're right, he's putting himself into situations where he's being let down by his final ball or his shot. But you're right, there's so many players in our team who aren't even getting into that position, who aren't arriving in that area. So I think we need to cut him some slack. I I agree that he hasn't been great at moments, but I quite like him. I do quite like him, and I do enjoy watching him play. And I think it's really harsh to, for people to go after this young kid after he's only been here, I don't know, a few months.
Huh, that's interesting. I feel like I'm at a place with Brennan Johnson now, and have been for a little while, that like I don't see him getting into great positions, right? For me, I don't see it as being a moment full of promise if there's still a defender between him and either the goal or another player, another Spurs player. So rather than me seeing him as like wasteful with good moments, I see him sort of doing what he does with okay moments and us never really creating a great moment in the game. Because I just don't see him being able to be a player who turns, you know, moments with space, moments in the final third into killer moments. I don't see that as being part of the game. So I didn't really see him as wasteful. I saw him as being the player that he is, being kind of a blunt instrument, being someone whose main thing is being on the other side of the defence that he never really was in the game. If he's played through and he's missed his cutback, if he's played through on goal and he misses his shot, then I think that's the conversation we're having. But every time we create a situation that he's 1v1 or 1v2 or 2v3, I don't see that as him wasting a great opportunity. I see that as Spurs failing to create a great opportunity in the first place. So I don't blame him for his performance in this game at all. I think that it was a misapproach or a misapplication from Spurs as a whole to create 1v1s for him, because that's not his game. So yeah, I don't have any frustration at all for him in this game because he's who he is. I think he did well or decent with what he had, which is to take a bunch of half chances because he can't get around the other side of his man. And so we again slowly grinded out a number of half chances until eventually a shot from distance in transition was Porro's shot, and it was incredible.
I think that's a very reasonable take, and I do think that's why we should all hold off having takes about Johnson until he's played with someone like Maddison consistently for a number of weeks, because Maddison will find him in behind. Yeah. If Johnson keeps making his runs, Madison's going to pick them out. So James said, can we talk a little bit about how the abuse Brennan and Seth have been getting is disgusting? And to be honest, I haven't been exposed to this because I've got a pretty reliable mute list on Twitter that means that I don't see a lot of this stuff. And so I wasn't quite aware of it until I was pointed specifically to a couple of tweets and things on Instagram. And I just can't get my head around why people would be atting players, abusing them. Like, these are Spurs players. You're a Spurs supporter. The whole concept of support is that you support. And Sessegnon, you know, I get that people are sick and tired of Sessegnon as a Spurs player in terms of him not being what they want him to be. But he's just had nearly a year out with injury. If this is anything other than a good thing that he's back from injury, like, what the hell? This should be a happy moment. We should be really pleased to see him back. He might not go on to be a brilliant Spurs player. He might be sold in this window. He might leave in the summer. But I don't understand why you wouldn't just be happy for him, he's back, and glad that, you know, after 300 days out, he's made it back onto a football pitch. He's a young lad. It's bizarre to me.
Yeah, I also saw that question in the Discord and had no idea about the abuse. And then someone posted a video where they accused Brennan Johnson of like not having cardio. And I'm like, that's the only thing that he had compared to the rest of the team. Like, we as a team are gassing out repeatedly and he's still doing sprints. So like, that's the complete opposite.
Doesn't stack up.
Of this just terrible analysis apart from being a dickhead.
Bardi, as someone who isn't Seth's biggest fan, were you happy to see him back on the pitch?
It was nice. It was heartwarming to see him come back. But that's about it, really. I was excited when we signed Sessegnon. I've been excited at moments where he seemed to have turned a corner. He definitely had moments with him and Doherty in wing-back roles under Conte where I was just like, oh, maybe. But then it always seemed to crumble, either mentally for him or physically. It just never worked out for him. The fact that he's back is good. If he plays more, then perhaps we can get a fee for him because he's English and he's got a nice passport. So maybe we can sell him for a bit of money.
And the reporting from Alistair Gold today is that Postecoglou wants to take a good look at him before deciding what comes next for him. And I think that is 100% the most sensible option. Mm-hmm. Like, just see what he does for the rest of the season. Clearly, he's not match fit. He looked very rusty out there. But why would he be? He's been out for 300 days. It's going to take some time to get back into shape and to get Matt Sharp. There's no need to rush him. There's no need to even play him at all if he doesn't want to, but take a look at him in training and see what happens. So Nathan already mentioned that some youngsters got on. Dane Scarlett, who's back from Ipswich, came on. Was a bit of a nuisance, but I thought was quite clumsy in terms of giving away fouls. But again, the expectations are very low for Scarlett, I think, at this point. And Jamie Donnelly came on.
Scarlett came on to press and harass and get involved and stop Burnley from playing out. So I thought he gave away some free kicks, but I think he did fine.
He's hungry, isn't he?
He was really hungry, man, and he really did sprint about closing people down, and that was fine. I thought he did fine there. He had an opportunity where he came through on goal and it got deflected wide. He did fine. I've always been a bit weird with Scarlett. I don't think he has an outstanding quality, whereas like Kane was just great at everything, or certain players are really fast, or certain players are like really good finishers. I don't see that in Scarlett. I just see him as a kind of all right player. So yeah, he did fine. He ran around a lot.
I don't know if you've seen the highlights, but the shot he had that was deflected wide took an absolutely horrific bobble just before we hit it as well.
Okay.
So like definitely wasn't a good strike at all. But it wasn't his fault that it wasn't a good strike. Donnelly came on as well, which I was delighted about. Finally a chance to see Donnelly for a slightly longer period of time. And I thought he looked fine. What do you think, Nathan?
Last night I watched all of Donnelly's, you know, 30 minutes or whatever of Donnelly's, 20 minutes for Spurs so far. And strong preference for a first time pass, which is quite nice. It makes sense for the system, definitely. Good defensive work, struggled a little with the intensity of senior men's football. And that's, you know, that going off 20 minutes.
What does that look like for you, the struggling with the intensity?
Arriving second to loose balls or being pushed off loose balls. Taking a touchdown and then just instantly being challenged as you take that touchdown, because you actually have to fight for every touch in the Premier League, kind of, especially if you're coming on at like 85 minutes or whatever in a tight game. But really good defense, as you mentioned when we discussed him before, good pressing, good defensive, good tracking back, that sort of stuff. I always wanted to say on Sessegnon, very unsurprised to see him come on the wing, because I think that makes sense to him much more than inverted fullback in this setup. Again, someone who moves well off the ball, runs in behind, arrives back post, things like that, rather than someone who's comfortable receiving under pressure as a fullback. So if he does have a future for us, I think it's probably going to be on the wing. But also, we just brought in Timo Werner. So surely that eats away that. But I guess there's just not too much discussion to have about Sessegnon at this stage, other than don't be weird and abusive towards him when he's come back from injury after a year.
Yeah,
I didn't
please,
see that, so
please.
I don't get it. Yeah.
Brian Hill came on. And I've said in the last couple of episodes, I thought he came on and achieved something, did something, looked lively. I didn't get that from him in this one at all.
Oh,
and are you the opposite?
No. I think that this appearance was in line with his other appearances so far, which is that like excellent tenacity, really, really goes out there and gives his all in the 15 minutes that he's on the pitch for, right? Comes off his hair full of his own sweat, right? Really strong technical fundamentals, his ability to receive the ball, to work with the ball, first touch, all fundamentally absolutely sound. Ability and desire to bring others into the game, really nice. But what I want him to be as a player, what he needs to be in this system, is someone who will make things happen, who will complete a dribble, who will lay on a chance for another player, who will create a chance for himself, who will take decisive actions, or at least threaten to do that so that two defenders come over to him. And he doesn't do that. Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's all I've really got to say about Hill. He just doesn't quite have that, again, that necessary bit of athleticism. He doesn't quite have, he's got guile, but if he had like elite guile, maybe he can make that be his thing that works for him. He's again technically very fundamental, but doesn't have some bit of skill that he can use to reliably beat a man, create a yard for himself. So So we just can't do decisive actions. And, you know, that's fine if you're going to play in Del Bosque's Spain national team and just circulate the ball forever. But we need someone who makes a difference for us. And he's not doing that.
I thought he was all right. You know, I thought he came on and had a positive impact. I don't think there was much happening on that left-hand side. I didn't think Johnson looked too at home there. I thought he looked better when he went to the right and Hill came on in the left. There was a moment, I think the Brennan Johnson volley into the ground, the goalkeeper saved. I think that was Hill's nice little link up down the left-hand yeah. side that had an impact on that. I thought he was fine. I just want to say that Destiny and Porro were incredible in this game.
Yep.
Those two guys are just something else. And Destiny is unbelievable. And Porro, obviously, unbelievable as well. Those two players were the standout on the pitch.
100% standout. Consistently throughout the match, I thought they were our best players, arguably our biggest threats as well. I thought both centre-backs did well as well.
Yeah.
But I guess that's to be expected in this game. Like, a lot of the actions they're having to take are sort of more traditional full-back actions of covering round and sweeping things up.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely
so
true.
So it really suited them both, I felt. And they both did excellently.
Agree on all counts. And then I'll also add probably an indictment of Burnley's attacking talent level that
yeah.
Royale looks like an excellent centre-back. Basically.
Yeah. There was no need for them to do anything too proactive. They could just wait for the ball to be whacked forward and then sweep up behind them. They both did that really effectively. I would say that Royale does still scare me sometimes by taking too many touches, but you know, he has the confidence that I can only ever aspire to having, so I'm not gonna lay into him too much for that. Justin Roller says, I was able to spend most of the weekend watching other FA Cup games in addition to Spurs. I have to say the flow of the game, the overall product as a viewer is so much better without VAR. Did any of you have the same feeling watching this weekend? And there were a lot of games that did not have VAR this weekend. And yes, I would agree. I really enjoyed not having that kind of overhanging feeling of that. Let's wait for that to get checked before we get excited about it.
Yeah, I got to agree. As already mentioned, I was in the stadium and there were moments of confusion when VAR went up. There was the somebody went over the goalkeeper and the referee looked at the incident and immediately put his hand to his ear to see what VAR was going to say. And my whole thing about VAR is we're just allowing referees to not make decisions, and they're refraining from making a decision because they're waiting for VAR to tell them what's happened. And I just felt I just saw it because he was quite close to me. Immediately he went to see what the video system was going to tell him to do. And it was nice to have these games where the referee took ownership of the match and they were the final decision. For right or wrong, they were the ones that were making the call. And I think that really came through in the Sunderland Newcastle game.
Hmm. Oh, I feel like such a toothless, useless, soft, moderate nobody, because I like, on one hand, it's a much better viewing experience. But on the other hand, sometimes you watch an old game without VAR or a modern cup game without VAR and someone scores a blatantly offside goal or someone kicks someone in the face before they take a shot and then it's not given because there's no video review and that's really bad. In conclusion, VAR is a land of contrasts.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think VAR can work, but I just think we need our referees to be stronger. And I think a referee needs to have the courage to go against what the VAR's told him and just judge on what they've seen and what they felt. Because these multiple slow down tackles that we keep seeing that's not football. Football's not played at that kind of speed.
Yeah, I think at some level VAR has to be scaled back. And I think that will have to happen within a couple of years unless they develop the technology and are able to do better with offsides, for example. Nathan, fewer milquetoast takes for the rest of the pod, please. Josh Emden says, I've had ball retention on my mind and had a question about long diagonal passing. I think there's been a bit of a trend for a while where we've struggled to build up through other teams pressing. Against Chelsea, Everton, Brighton and Bournemouth, we started the game doing it well and then their pressing started to cause us more problems.
Yep.
Agreed. Burnley are not as good as those teams, but with Porro's long diagonals to Johnston in this match, even if the end product was infuriating, it felt like we had an effective way to bypass their press. Thinking back to when we had Jan and Toby, my sometimes unreliable memory says this was also a big feature of their game, particularly Toby. Is long diagonal passing something that's been a feature of Ange's football in the past?
Yes.
Do you think this is something Dragushin can do? Some YouTube clips were showing it, but Nathan's more detailed video shows it's not exactly a regular feature for him. And a longer shot probably, is there any data about diagonal passing under Pochettino versus now under Ange?
Certainly not that I have to hand. In the YouTube highlights, Dragushin hits some nice long diagonal passes, but they don't tend to actually appear very often because mainly Genoa are looking to get the ball up rather than along, you know? So whether that's something that he'll be doing more regular for us, I don't know. I mean, this all kind of ties into the discussion about attack speed and forward profile that we're continuing to sort of push down a bit longer. It's something that we've used a bit also when it's like to punish the other team for pressing us, to make them more reluctant quite a bit this season. It's tying into our, in my opinion, what do you call it, a basketball gameness, our basketball style attack, and I want to see a bit more variety in how we do things, basically.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you there. Porro's ability to pick a diagonal is almost second to none in the squad, I would say. Actually, Højbjerg came on and hit a really nice crossfield as well, although he did make some horrendous misjudgments at the end in the stoppage time.
Oh, do we want to talk about Skip's performance in this game?
I was going to avoid it because I've gone in on Skip so much recently. I mean, I think universally it's agreed that Skip was terrible in this match.
Okay.
And we don't need to go into it too much. I mean, the thing is, like, after the first 20 minutes, I think he'd completed something like 7 passes or had 7 touches maybe. And quite a few people in the Discord live chat were like, oh, I'd forgotten Skip was even playing. And I think that kind of sums him up in this 8 role. For me, like, he has to play as a 6 or not at all, and preferably not at all. I'm a massive fan of Skip as a player, and I've heard he's a very nice person as well, like a really good person. And I want good things for Oliver Skip, but I think he needs to leave to get those good things. He does not suit the system one bit.
Well, I think he played much higher up the pitch than Saar tends to do in that role, and that allowed Lascelles to drop towards the ball. And I think that he did lots of off-ball movement that helped allow, you know, Kulusevski to get into the game. But also when he touched the ball himself, generally not great things happened. So, yeah. Yeah, let's move on. You're right.
Talking about going direct, and Poch, everyone forgets that Poch got to the Champions League final by yeeting it up at Llorente's head.
Yep.
So going direct can work. I don't think it's a tactic we should use all the time, but I quite like a good old diagonal, and Michael Dawson whack across the pitch is always quite nice. Everybody's going for Toby. Give me a Michael Dawson thwack across. That's a nice one.
And Porro took it to extremes with that finish. I mean, you could see what was kind of going through his mind. He was like, I could pass, and he just hit it with so much swaz. It was beautiful. And I love Pedro Porro. I keep saying it. I loved his celebration. I love the fact that he celebrated a block again. He's just joyful to watch.
He celebrated that right in front of me. And you could see I'm a proper, I don't know, a gammon or like a boomer. That's not a gammon, a boomer. He was celebrating right in front of me. And I was just jumping along. And I was like, oh, I should really take a photo. And by the time I took my photo, he'd buggered off. So, but it was great. He's got a lot of passion in him. He's a brilliant football player. And we're really lucky to have him. So, before we head into our advert break, here's a little quiz question for you and our listeners. It's a two-part question. It was FA Cup third round this weekend, and with all the injuries in our team, it made me remember the famous game we played against Man United in the third round when injuries ravaged us. The easy part of the question is, which two youth products started up front that famous day? And the second part is, what year was it?
I think that was the Rory Allen Neil Fenn game.
That is right? Correct game. That is correct. They were that was the easy part. Now, what year was it, Windy? Cast your mind.
Gosh. So it's mid-90s. I'm going to say I was becoming a little bit more of the concept of a youth player. So I must have been at least 16, I would have thought. But then that puts it beyond mid-90s. Maybe it's 1999.
No, that's incorrect. Nathan, do you want to guess?
Sure. 1998.
Oh, no, it was 1997. Oh. And our manager was Jerry Francis. And our team that for that game was Ian Walker, Austin, Calderwood, Campbell, Edinburgh, Carr, Nielsen, Howes, Sinton, Allen and Fenn, as you correctly said. And the Man United team that year is like the who's who's. It's Schmeichel, Neville, Johnson, Beckham, Keane, Scholes, Giggs, Cantona. And we put up a good little fight on TV, and but we ultimately got done 2-0 with Beckham.
And neither Fenn nor Allen really went on to achieve a great deal elsewhere in the Football League either.
You know what happened to Rory Allen? He gave up football to go and watch the cricket down under.
That's right.
Join the Barmy Army.
That's right.
Neil Fenn went on to do a little bit of coaching, a little bit of management, but I think the last job he had was at Cork City when they were bottom of the league.
Nice.
Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should be at least simple. That's why for the last couple of years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exception. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. It makes me feel ready to take on the challenge. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. Hey, Windy, did you know that I'm running the Milan Marathon?
I didn't.
Well, I am, and my coach, Coach Hunna, has said I need to strengthen my glutes. So I've been doing plenty of weighted squats. And do you know what the best way to combat DOMS is?
No, Barney, I don't. Please tell me.
Well, first up, let me tell you what DOMS means. It's delayed onset muscle soreness, which is the stiffness you feel the next day. And how do you combat extreme stiffness? Well, you get more magnesium in you. Thankfully, my scoop of AG1 has exactly that. So be less stiff in the morning. Take AG1, make AG1 one of the first things you do every morning, mate.
If there's one product we had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why we've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/extrainch. That's drinkag1.com/extrainch. Check it out. Barney, I've got a bit of correspondence for you.
Oh, hello.
This is from our friend Rich, who says, "Dear the Extra Inch," very formal is Rich.
Yeah.
"In August, I emailed shooting down Barney's ill-informed assertions around the Barbie movie, specifically his insistence that kids aren't interested in Barbie anymore, referencing my own daughters and the massive Barbie-inflicted hole in my wallet. I did add slightly tongue-in-cheek, if there's anything good to come out of this sorry saga, it's this. I was a bit worried when Barney analysed Vicario, but now I know he talks with great authority, whether informed or otherwise, I'm much more relaxed about our new number one. Barney conceded that he made an assumption that was evidently incorrect, but that the Vicario stuff was based on fact, so don't come at me with that. Ending, send another email in December, Rich, and we'll chat then."
On cue! Let's go!
"With a game on the 31st of December, I didn't want to jinx him into a shocker, so I kept my powder dry. But we are past December now, a month when Vicario was arguably our best performer. So, Penny for Barney's thoughts?"
I could see why this wasn't in the running order. Shout out to Rich for keeping receipts. I admire people that keep receipts, because I do the same. Vicario has been sensational. For me, I would play him as Italy's number one at the moment. So I'd go into the Euros as him as our number one. I think he's making far less mistakes than Donnarumma. I'm far more confident with him. I still don't think he's that great with his feet. I think there's big improvement to be made there, but he's pretty solid with that. He's been miles, miles better than I expected. Honestly, he's been unbelievable. I never said he was shit. I would have preferred to get David Raya or Onana, who I kind of knew a bit more about, and I would have felt more comfortable with that. But now we got this guy for half the price of those guys, and he's been brilliant, man. He's been brilliant. He's not thrown one thing in the net. And he's proved me wrong. He doesn't need to prove me wrong. I'm nobody. But he's been fantastic, man. He's been brilliant. One of a really good signing. Can't believe how cheap we got him.
I do think as well, like, it's incredible how he just came out of nowhere. Like, I'd never heard of Vicario. And I follow quite a lot of people on social media who know stuff about obscure players. No one had mentioned Vicario that I'd seen.
Nah.
He hadn't been linked with Spurs. You know, when people are listing goalkeepers they want us to sign, he doesn't come up at all. Nathan might say otherwise.
He showed up in my data. He showed up in my data, except that I cut him because he didn't do any sweeping actions. But in the prior round, he was a standout.
Interesting. But I mean, it's testament to the recruitment team at Spurs that they figured out that what he was doing was brilliant and what he wasn't doing was probably because he wasn't being asked to do those things. And that's really smart work.
It's really smart work. Serie A is littered with goalkeepers that can make good saves, but I never liked Alex Meret at Napoli, and he just reminded me of him. But he's miles better than that. He's been unbelievable. And thing is, you don't panic when the ball's coming into him. He's the right little jack in the box. He's very bouncy, but it's like he doesn't let that come into his game. He remains pretty calm in the moment, you know, when the action's happening around him, and he's bouncy kind of afterwards. He's been great this season, unbelievable.
So obviously it's transfer season. Obviously there's a lot of interest in Spurs' transfer activity. We're noticing quite a few people are signing up for our Patreon at the moment, which is great news. Patreon.com/theextrainch, where you will find Nathan's scouting profiles, like his watch along on Radu Dragushin, which was very enjoyable. Also, you get to join our Discord, which has, in my opinion, the very best filtered news and rumours updates on the internet. Set your notifications on for that, and you get the best news and rumours straight through to your phone, which is incredibly helpful. Thanks to Cal, the legend. And you can make data viz requests of Nathan, and he'll just potter away and pull up some polars for you, which is not always nice. And Nathan, were you happy with how your video went with on Dragushin?
I think so, yeah. I think so. Have you watched it?
I have, yeah. I'm not sure about him.
Okay. Yeah, that's
I don't know whether to be excited or not. He reminds me of Japhet Tanganga, to be honest.
I can see that. I really can.
I think I obviously he's a lot taller and physically better in the air. Yeah. Although Tanganga's got good neck muscles, and obviously Tanganga has some major injury problems, but I thought there was a similarity there.
I think people will listen to this podcast and they'll hear you say that, and they will either go into a panic or a rage at you saying that. I see what you're saying. Let me try to rephrase in a way that will seem less distressing or perplexing. He's like the player that Tanganga could potentially be like if he got first team minutes and really grew into his abilities. Yeah.
He's levels above.
Yeah. The focus of the video was not really on his defensive game, because I think that's kind of a known quantity and something that's fairly easy to explain, but on his ball playing, which I think is a much more complicated and nuanced topic. I guess, what was your overall feeling on that particular topic coming away from the video?
The thing that I noticed that he does consistently is he kind of backs himself into a corner with what he has to do next.
Yes.
So he allows the ball to come across him a lot, or he takes a touch, which means he's got one option and one option only.
Yes.
Or he gets too close to the opposition player, which means he's got one option and one option only.
Yes.
And he doesn't kind of, you know how Romero, you feel like he could do one of any four or five things whenever he's on the ball, because he's so smooth and he's so in control, and he's rolling the ball with his studs, and he's just calmness personified.
Yes.
It's the opposite of that is what Dragushin is.
That's kind of the main message I think I wanted to get across in the video. And I even showed some Romero clips towards the end of saying, look how he keeps the ball neutral to him, and he's got this pass and this pass and this pass open to him at all times. And obviously, a significant amount of that can be coached, the body positioning elements, the ball positioning elements. But then even then his execution is, bobbly. The other point I make in the video with that regard is, like, I referenced a conversation that you and I had on the podcast. Was this what might have been the paywalled one? Was it the Q&A one, or was it a regular?
Maybe.
Where we talked about how essentially ignoring the aesthetics and even ignoring sort of the approach, what Dragušin achieves on the ball is keeping it ticking over, keeping it safe passes, safe, simple passes. And that when we have if we were to have Dragusin and Van de Ven on the pitch at the same time, you've got two players who can keep the ball and who can move the ball, but we'd be lacking, in my opinion, a player who can make incisive passes from the centre-back position and get the ball into midfield and beyond that. And previously when we talked about it, you felt like that wasn't a problem because the system progresses the ball as a collective thing, whereas I think that Romero does a lot for us. Do you want to reflect on that at all?
I think we can get away with it if we've got Bissouma, Porro, Udogie all in the team. If we haven't, okay, I think we'd struggle. On that basis, the Romero Van de Ven combo I think would be ideal, and the Dragusin Davis combo as the second might work better Davis is a better ball progressor than Van de Ven, and so that could be one option to have. Pairings that work in tandem. So if you play, depending on the opposition, I don't know. It's so hard though, isn't it? Because you know, you go into a game against Man U, our next game, and Romero's out. You're going to want the next best centre back to play. You're going to want Dragusin to play and not Dragusin and Davis.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
I get what you're saying, but you love your partnerships theory, but like, yeah, you just played the two best ones that you got available, basically, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a big man who can win some big headers.
Oh, yeah.
He's a specimen.
He's a unit.
I didn't see anything in his passing that makes me think he's going to thread anything through, but I just don't think he's going to be mugged off in any situation. And he'll just keep it simple. And you're right, if he's got good players around him that can do passing. I mean, I think he's definitely more comfortable on the ball than Sanchez is or was. So that's an improvement. And I think he's far better centre-back than Royale, than Dier. And perhaps it's Davies. So that's an improvement as well.
Yeah.
So, I'm not too down on him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's a significant upgrade on what we've got as backup. And
nothing.
Fullbacks.
Royale, basically, or Dier. And I think that has to be the aim. And it's similar to Vicario, isn't it? Like, maybe there's something there that we've not seen yet because of the system he's been playing in. So maybe there's more to come. Let's hope so.
It was the one game he played possession football, Nathan showed, was when he played for Juve under Pirlo, and he did look really nervous in that match.
And he was like 18.
He was trying to give it away immediately.
Yeah.
It does, just to make a general point, and less on Dragusin particularly, with the centre-back we've already signed, with the centre-back we're looking to sign, with all the centre-backs we've been linked with, and with the forwards, I guess, it very much seems to be the case that our number one priority, and basically every signing that we make, is elite athlete.
Mm.
Athleticism first, athleticism second, and everything else is tertiary to that, right? We're signing a bunch of freaks. We've got a freak show on the go.
But that's okay if you can then sprinkle in a bit of technical quality here and there, and like in Madison and Bentancur and everywhere else. If we just have some big guys who could jump a lot and run a lot, then it's my kind of football team.
Basketball team.
Yeah.
So I trailed this question earlier, but we'll deal with it now. So this is from Tobias Howlett, who said, I have a theory on the lack of 1v1 winger. Ange believes that once his system's attacking structure and patterns have bedded in, we'll be able to consistently create chances against low blocks without a 1v1 specialist winger, and instead our front line will be comprised of transition specialists who will tear apart our direct rivals in more transitional games. I made the point on the Discord yesterday in relation to the Werner signing that maybe Ange is just less concerned about 1v1 specialist wingers and creators from wide, because he's been so impressed with Udogie and Porro and how they contribute so much to the attack. Or maybe it's just that now he's seen a bit of Bentancur, now he's seen Kulusevski in the middle, got Madison, he feels there's enough ability to beat players either with or without the ball in the midfield backing up that front three, and he'll just use the front three to make runs essentially in behind. Nathan, what do you think of this theory from Tobias?
It's getting harder to look past, right? When you look at the way that we've approached games recently, especially when you look at the profile of, yeah, again, not just forwards, but also centre backs and everyone else, it looks like, or certainly the efforts we've done so far is to build a basketball team, is to just be everything transition all the time, maximum intensity and speed, and just blow teams away by playing full pitch, full court football, right? and which is not kind of a million miles away from Vardy's West Brom in Armani suits analysis of Man City, right? Is they've become a much, much more athletic version of themselves. I guess just a little side note, you can get a guy who's dribbly and fast. In fact, those two things do tend to go together. So you could just get like Armand Lloriente and he can do the counterattacks and the settled against low blocks type thing. Anyway, whatever. I'm reluctant to position myself against the judgment of Ange Postecoglou. I'm reluctant to say, I think this guy, who, by the way, I basically am in love with, has got this one wrong, right? I'm reluctant to position myself opposite him. So, first of all, yeah, maybe we are over the next couple of windows. Maybe we're going to next season and we are just going to basketball everyone to death. We're just going to be three goals up 40 minutes into the game and that's your problem. And if you score one, fine, whatever, but we're just going to keep running at you and running at you. And our fullbacks are our playmakers and you're just going to suffer counterattack followed by, you know, fake counterattack followed by real counterattack followed by high turnover from the press, and we're just going to have three players running into your box all game. Maybe, in my opinion, you know, that's cool. We could also alternatively have a different way of approaching the game sometimes when that's not working, and have a guy who wants to receive the ball to feet and then make things happen from there. And I think that, like, you know, he did play Jota every week at Celtic. We are being linked with Jota. We did buy Solomon in the window prior. But certainly the priority so far, when you look at the fact that we're bringing in Timo Werner and we haven't brought in a guy who can dribble the ball, that the priority is athletes who move off the ball first and everything else second. And look, I've made my place. I think maybe the only thing more I could do, the only thing more I could say would be to do like a Jota at Celtic analysis. And maybe that's something people want me to do February, March time, depending on... Mm-hmm. Maybe if we win every game in February by running at teams really fast off the ball and I have been defeated by facts and logic, right? But maybe we come towards the summer and we're like, okay, we're still, in my opinion, it seems like we're still missing this profile and I can explore that more. But for the time being, I will say, look, I'm in for the ride. If we can just basketball teams to death, then that'll be interesting. That'll be, and I guess this comes back to a point I made way back in the summer. I think in the company video I did, where I was like, every team in the world, when they get up towards the elite level, or at least the vast majority of them, are doing some variety of Guardiola football, right? They're doing, let's have all of the ball all the time. Let's press really high so we have all of the ball all the time. Let's position ourselves in various structures so as to stretch your position as wide and as deep as possible, and then utilize triangles to create chances in the box. And football tactically is maybe stagnating a little. We had this thing where we're like, oh, what about if the opposition are really good at counter-pressing and they turn the ball over lots? And we had Klopp and we had Liverpool and we had Leipzig, and it's good and it's difficult to play against, but ultimately Guardiola ball won out that battle, right? So like, what's the next stage of football? Well, maybe it's having three guys who are just there to get the final touch on the ball and nothing else. So on that sort of whim, yeah, sure, let's give this a go. That'll be interesting to watch, at least most of the time.
Is there any possibility that it could be that Kulusevski is the one that has the time of the ball? Kulusevski is the one that comes towards the ball and takes touches, and the other winger, the opposite winger, is the one who's making runs in behind.
This is kind of thing, right? This is the other important aspect, is that, like, yeah, I think historically, again, Postecoglou likes a centre forward who basically only touches the ball once, and that's to put the ball in the net. And then his two wingers, one is much more of a forward and one is much more of a dribbler. And again, at Celtic, he had Maeda and Abada would play left and right respectively, but Jota would always displace one of them in the team and he would be the dribbler and the other would remain as a forward on the opposite flank, right? And so at Spurs, we have Kulusevski and he's the ball carrier. He's the player who wants the ball to the feet. He's the very good crosser. He's the creative player. But like, why are we increasing our depth for the forwards and wide forwards and not increasing our depth for Kulusevski? Is it because we think Solomon's going to come back and make a real impact and take minutes away from Kulusevski? I doubt that. So yeah, Kulusevski's kind of the problem because he's obviously a very, very good player. He's obviously more fitting to the role of the ball-to-feet wide player in the Postecoglou system, but also he doesn't have the pace to get round his man regularly. and so there's kind of a bit blunt there, despite his quality. And then there's a period of time where it's like, well, actually, he's getting these games in the middle now, so maybe that opens up opportunity for us to bring in a left-footed right winger. But then that's, again, not where we're looking. And Kulusevski's been back playing on the wing a lot more recently, although I guess that's to do with Son going away now, etc. So, yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. And the other thing is, you know, it's January. Maybe we just feel like we can't afford to spend big on this profile until the summer. Another, you told me not to be milquetoast, but no strong feelings after 20 minutes of nonsense speaking.
Bardi, I'll give this one to you since Nathan will probably need a glass of water right now. Peter D. So actually, I'll just say some thank yous because we've spoken a bit about Timo Werner already, and I'm sure we'll talk about him more in next week's podcast as well. So thank you to Afro Scott, our friend Mark Wood, and Toby McCarthy, who also asked stuff about Werner. I think we kind of covered off all of your questions in the bit at the top of the podcast. Peter D says, with the players returning, are there any changes to transfer priorities? I think we still need a centre-back urgently, but I question whether we really need midfield cover like Gallagher now that Bentancur has returned and Lo Celso looks capable of covering multiple roles. I'd rather we move for better cover for our full-backs, where an injury leaves us with no real system-fit players. I would like a winger or forward, but given the difficulties of securing talent in January, I'd rather wait until summer and then sign a stopgap now, especially as we can give Scarlett and Valise the odd game. So, Bardi, what would be your transfer priorities, assuming we've got Werner and Dragushin through the door? What would be your next priority?
I mean, I imagine it would be quite difficult for us to replace, right now, replace Porro or Destiny. I think that might be quite complicated. I think a centre-back, definitely, especially if Dragushin doesn't go to Spurs, if he ends up going to, I don't know, Napoli or Bayern, then definitely another centre-back. I think the full-backs is going to be a longer journey for where we go from there. I agree, that's the one position where there's a real significant drop-off. A winger forward, Nathan's spoken at length about. The forwards, I think we're okay. I think full-backs would be good, but I just don't see that happening now. I think with Werner and a centre back, I think that'll be a pretty decent January window.
The more time goes on, and he's mentioned it again, the more I see Oliver Skip try and play the eight role, the more I think there really is a place for Conor Gallagher in this squad and maybe even the team. Another goal-scoring midfielder, another midfielder who can do a lot of different things in the system, I think would be really, really helpful. And it would allow, if we got Gallagher now, it would allow us to sell Højbjerg, who, for whatever reason, Ange isn't using at the moment, probably because he might be leaving. Højbjerg, I think, fits as a six only in the system. I don't think he fits as an eight, and we need that eight cover. Bentancur has been used as a six. Maybe that's because he's just returning from injury and so he's being eased back in, but he's doing pretty well there, to be honest. He looks at home at the six. I prefer him as an eight, but he looks at home. So I'd still really like Gallagher or a similar player if we can get them.
We're not going to sign anyone there until we sell Højbjerg. That's the thing. And it looks like Juventus aren't interested anymore either, so I don't know what's going to happen. But we have to sell first, for sure.
Yeah, so the reporting there is that we asked for too high a loan fee for Højbjerg that's put Juventus off. I think we also want a permanent transfer at the end of it rather than an option to make it permanent, which makes sense. There's been some other transfer news. So Dyer seemed set to go to Bayern. Was there any surprise for you on that one, Bardi?
A little bit, yeah. I don't know how he sits in. I don't know. They now have Kane up front, but I imagine they play a high line. So that was a strange one. But it'd be good to see. I hope he does go to Bayern. That'd be fantastic for him.
Yeah, I think so as well. And we've also seen Josh Keighley go to Barnet, and he made his debut at the weekend there in the National League. I'm really pleased to see us make use of the National League. I think, you know, you don't have to have all your players going to League One and League Two clubs. If it means they're going to get regular games, then that's a good thing. And I'm really pleased for Keighley. He needs some men's football. Ashley Phillips has gone to Plymouth, which is a really interesting move. They play good football, although their defence is bad. So we'll see how he gets on there. He'll certainly be tested. It sounds like Matthew Craig is going to Doncaster. He is a... at the moment, he's primarily a holding midfielder, but he can play a bit more of a box-to-box role. And he was one that needed to go out on loan for sure. It sounds also like Iago Santiago and Will Lancashire are being lined up for loan moves. I would be a bit sad if Jamie Donnelly doesn't get a loan. The suggestion is that he will stay around the first team. My worry with that is always that a player then goes out on loan and overtakes him in the pecking order because they've got more experience and they've maybe beefed up a bit out on loan or got more wily. And I think that would be a pity for Donnelly. So if he does stay, I hope he continues to get minutes off the bench at least. We've also seen Reguilon and Spence return from their loans.
Club signing.
Yeah, so Jed Spence got absolutely hung out to dry by Daniel Farker in the press conference he gave, which I did not enjoy one bit. And the suggestion is that Spence will be training with the under-21s until he gets another loan or a permanent move. Ange doesn't seem keen, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I, especially Windy, had a big old moan at Conte week after week after week for not using Spence. But now, we've got to say he's fallen out with another coach, and it looks like Postecoglou is among those coaches that he's fallen out with. Postecoglou is always going to get the benefit of the doubt from me 100%. On these things, right? So, you know, he's got all the ability he needs to be an elite level footballer, but clearly there's something about his application, which in my opinion doesn't show when his performance is too bad. He has a, I tweeted about this, he has sort of, and we talked about this when we did our video on him together, Windy. He's sometimes kind of lackadaisical about tracking back, but in my opinion, that seems more to be about sort of an over-optimism of every scenario working out for him than it is about a laziness. But clearly there's something about the way that he trains or his attitude, the way he talks to people, whatever it is, that has upset everyone but Steve Cooper. So good luck with that, buddy.
Yeah, no, I think it's like absolutely fair enough if Ange Postecoglou doesn't rate Spence for whatever reason. Like, I, like you, I back him. I trust him to make the right judgment. I just really don't enjoy Daniel Farker going off at another young Spurs loanee.
We gotta stop selling them to him, right?
Yeah, well, no, end that straight away. Like, no more dealing with Daniel Farker because they've got no right of reply.
Who else did he go after?
Marcus Edwards, okay. When he was at Norwich, he commented on him on his professionalism as well.
I remember now, yeah.
And I think it can be really damaging, and maybe that's one reason why Edwards literally left the country to go to his next club, because his reputation was somewhat ruined. And I hope that Spence does find another club and does well, because it could be quite ruinous for him. Like, there's ways of dealing with these issues, and I think you've got to be diplomatic about it. And talking to the press in this way to protect yourself from the backlash from your fans, I think is not really on. Basically, Leeds fans weren't very pleased that the loan ended early because he was just starting to do pretty well. And
they're in trouble at fullback, and he was probably their best performing fullback, even in the limited minutes that he played. So, but again, Spence falling out with yet another coach again and again. Yeah. It keeps happening.
Yeah. Oh, at this point, like, there's no point like persevering. There's no point. So cut him loose. But I just didn't like the way that Farker dealt with it, and I wouldn't want us to work with him again. It's been a long old pod, lads. It's been a long old pod. I feel like we've covered a lot of ground in this one. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Have got anything else to talk about transfers wise? I feel like there's still more somehow.
Oh God, there's like every 10 minutes there's some other link popping up at the moment. It feels unrelenting.
We have a game next week, do we?
We don't have a game, so hopefully we'll have some transfers to talk about on the next pod.
All right, save anything else for then.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Clark. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.